Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. I'm your host, John Peters, and I'm joined by Kyle McKelvey. This week, we're joined by Slade Wilkes from Southern Miss Baseball. We take a look back at what happened in week 10, and we look ahead to week 11 in college baseball. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, how's it going? I'm looking at a white face in a dark room. What's going on there?
Yeah, so there's a big storm rolling through Houston, and we are out of power. And so, you know, we gotta push through, and you gotta do whatever it takes. So we are recording on my phone.
The team mentality right here.
the light of my computer screen lighting my face.
Yeah, we're on a clock here. We have to get everything recorded before all of his devices ran out of power.
Yeah.
So commitment to the podcast, Kyle. This will go on your yearly report for sure.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that.
So a great weekend in college baseball. Let's start off with the best thing that we saw last weekend. I want to talk about Air Force. So I'm not going to talk about how Air Force split two games with Texas, but that was still pretty cool and a cool thing for Air Force to do. I want to talk about Paul Skeens and what Paul Skeens did over the weekend against Fresno State was one of the coolest things I've seen. In the middle of an absolute snowstorm, he hit two home runs, including a bomb in the bottom of the eighth, makes for an amazing call by the announcer as the ball goes and disappears into the snow. So middle of April snowstorm in Colorado Springs makes for some very entertaining baseball.
You know, I'm jealous of that snowstorm right about now. It might mean that we have power here in Houston if we have a snowstorm instead of this rainstorm. But yesterday was pretty hot, so it would be nice to have a little bit of cold.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you were in the heat of College Station, Texas yesterday. Is that right?
I was. Yeah. Yeah. I went to A&M game at. Hosting Arkansas. It was the rubber match of that series that A&M took. It was a really, really fun game, except for the heat. Going back and forth there, A&M jumped out to a huge lead, and then they were kind of sassing the Arkansas fans that were in attendance. And then the Arkansas fans kind of fought back because their team made a really big comeback. It was like a 5-run eighth inning that made it a really tense eighth inning. It was, I think they had
second and third, right? And nobody out, one run game.
Yeah,
in the
and then Jacob Polish came in and shut down essentially that middle of that Arkansas lineup. It was crazy.
I think he was the MVP for the weekend because he had a four inning save.
Yeah,
in game one. I think.
Yeah, game one. Game one was a really well pitched game for both teams. I think. Yeah, I mean, he kind of shut down Arkansas on Friday night and came back in.
But that wasn't the best thing you saw.
No, the best thing I saw, there was a perfect game this week. In D1, there was a perfect game. And in D2, there was another perfect game. It was the 28th perfect game in Division II history. Luke Tupi of St. Cloud State. That's impressive. That was a 7-inning perfect game. And we saw the same thing in the Division I game. Shamar Page of Grambling State threw a 7-inning perfect game also for the 34th perfect game in NCAA history. So that seems really low for how many games have been played in college baseball history and how good the pitching kind of sometimes can be. Maybe it's just the bats have been, like the metal bats have messed things up for all of college baseball. But that 7-inning perfect game was masterful. It was 13 strikeouts of course, no walks, no hits, no earned runs. It was a really good weekend for Grambling State altogether. I think they outscored Alcorn 57-6. So pretty dominant shutdown.
That'll do it. I don't want to be the Debbie Downer here. 7-inning perfect games in my mind are worth a whole lot less than 9-inning perfect games. Like going through a lineup a fourth time is just a third time is just a really tough thing to do, and not doing it fully because of the 7 innings, I think, is a little bit of an asterisk on that perfect game.
Yeah, I get that. He still struck out 62% of the batters he faced. there would have been like only six more outs in that. He got 21 outs. They should have
kept playing. I've been like, okay, he's a perfect game going. Let's just see what happens.
I think it was the run ruling. They're playing Alcorn State, who is, I think, 301st in pretty much all of our rankings. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, in every meaningful statistic, they're last. So, but still cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. It was, yeah, really well done. I think the guy, I was looking at a picture, the guy looks like he's in his 30s. He looks really old.
Well, college baseball is getting older, right? With all the eligibility rules.
But yeah, well done for Shamar Page from Grambling State and Luke Tupi of St. Cloud State.
So let's take a turn now to the brand new top 50 this week. Once again, Tennessee is number one. It's the fifth straight week now. The Volunteers have been number one. They just swept Florida on the road. Behind them is Miami at number two, Stanford number three, Oregon State four, Southern Miss number five, the highest we've ever had in the Golden Eagles in our top 50. Following them, Virginia at six, Gonzaga seven, Arkansas down to eight, then Oklahoma State and UCLA. A few teams entered the top 25 this week. So Texas A&M moves up to number 20, Georgia Southern at 24, Wofford at 25, and then a few teams entering the top 50, Louisiana at 42, Liberty 43, San Diego 49. Kyle, what are your takeaways from the movement in the top 50 this week?
Yeah, it seemed like they're like after coming off of last week that we had so many top 25 teams, top 50 teams lose.
A lot of chaos.
Yeah, this week wasn't as much, but there was still some fun stuff to watch. I mean, ACC, as always, is cannibalizing itself. I like that note. I think you tweeted that Notre Dame has either been swept or done the sweeping in all of their ACC series.
Yeah, and like two of their series got shortened, one to one game and one to two games. So it's a little bit off, but like it's still like there's not a team in the ACC that Notre Dame has both beaten and lost to. It's only one or the other.
Yeah, they're all or nothing kind of team.
Yeah, and this weekend it worked out for them as they earned a sweep. So Wake Forest was subdued. And a fun little race in the Atlantic brewing between Notre Dame and Louisville top the Atlantic at 11-7. Miami is kind of running away with the Coastal at 16-5, and the team that's behind them, Virginia, is a team that they swept. And then Virginia Tech is also tied with Virginia three games back, which is also a team. That's a team that Miami has lost its only series to. So Coastal is not as a tight race, but it was enough the last weekend to move Miami back up to number two. And I think Miami is really positioning itself really well for the end of the year in terms of top 10 RPI, number one in a major conference. This feels like a team that's going to be a top eight seed unless the wheels come off the train.
Absolutely.
So elsewhere, let's take a brief recap of some of the action from last week's pick'em. And you know what? We can just talk about this the rest of the podcast because... I'm a big fan of what the results were.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
No, we don't have to spend too much time on it. Once again, it was a little bit of a tricky week with the pick'em because of the fact that we probably picked too many ACC series and ACC series just where pick'em pickers go to lose. So I gained 7 points on you this week because of our 2-point bet with Wofford. I picked Wofford to knock out Mercer, and oh boy, did they. 17-7 game one, shut out Mercer on game two. So Wofford is the new king of the SoCon for sure. But Mercer salvaged that series. So they actually are only a game back in SoCon still. But I think let's talk a little bit about Tulane and East Carolina because we have a piece up by Steve Parkhurst on that series. You picked East Carolina to win that series. Tulane ended up winning it. They're both tied right now atop the American. Obviously, Tulane has the head-to-head because of that series. Until the end of the year when East Carolina does not win the American, I still feel like they could have a chance to win it. But I think that opinion now is really truly based on history. I think after watching some of that series, I think that Tulane is the best team in the American. Like, I think I can say that pretty confidently.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's Tulane, UCF, and ECU tied for first right now in the American, with Tulane having the tiebreaker head to head. And I think Tulane plays at UCF this weekend. I think I would pick Tulane to win that series if we had to pick it. They dominated their closest competition at ECU this weekend.
And that was without Grant Seigel, their Friday night starter.
Yeah.
Like, he had some forearm soreness. So Tulane won that series without their best pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could argue that ECU hasn't had Carson Wisenhunt all year, so they also play that series without their best pitcher. But this one was a little bit more a last minute thing. Seigel was a last minute scratch with forearm soreness, as opposed to Wisenhunt, who's just out for the year.
Yeah, they've planned for that. ECU has coming into the weekend. But yeah, I was taking the hot hand, and I should have gone with the home team. Tulane's good. They're solid offensively. They're really good. I regret it.
And elsewhere, in some missteps, Georgia did win that series at Alabama. I think part of the reason why we just didn't know what Jonathan Cannon's status would be, he ended up pitching game two in that, the game in which Georgia won. So maybe had you known that Cannon would have been back, it would have been a little bit easier for you to pick Georgia in that series. But Georgia really kind of consolidates itself as one of the top contenders for the East, especially now that Arkansas lost that series to Texas A&M. And we no longer have a runaway leader in the SEC West, with now Auburn and A&M chasing Arkansas. So it's a lot happened in the SEC in terms of implications for both the East and the West. I think that it's unlikely anyone catches Tennessee, but Georgia seems like a really solid number two team in the East, and that all of a sudden now Auburn and A&M have a chance perhaps to catch Arkansas.
Yeah, and Auburn's a game back. LSU and A&M are both two games back from Arkansas. And yeah, there's the schedule sets up well for a lot of these teams to make up some ground. And who would have thought at the beginning of the year that Auburn, I think, was picked last by the coaches to be like second so far, six series in, I think we are. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, the race for coach of the year in SEC would be really interesting if not for Tony Vitello.
Right. Yeah.
I think
the race for second place in coach of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Like Vitello, I mean, a lot of times it's fun, like when the coach of the year is like a most improved type of team, you know, right? Like it's like, wow, like Sauce Nagel or Butch Thompson, you know, would be really great candidates for it with what they've done at Auburn and A&M. When you're 17-1 in conference, and if he's anything like that at the end, he will win coach of the year and deserves to win coach of the year. But there's a lot of pretty, pretty great coaching performances in the SEC this year.
Yeah. I mean, right now, I think this is right. Tennessee was fourth in the preseason coaches poll. Vanderbilt first. Yeah. And for the East, I mean, Auburn was seventh, A&M was sixth. So yeah, it's pretty cool all around that a lot of these teams are getting it done despite preseason expectations. And that comes at the I don't know, at Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Yeah.
Expenses. Yeah. I think that
makes sense.
That's going to be maybe a conversation that we can hold for maybe a couple weekends from now.
Mm-hmm.
But is Bianco done at Ole Miss? I'm not ready to put the nail in the coffin, but this feels like it could spell the end of his tenure at Ole Miss, just because of how high the expectations are and the lack of Omaha appearances.
Yeah, I mean, I think every SEC fan is ready to get rid of their coach the second they win the second they lose a weekend series to a team they're not supposed to. But I saw some Arkansas fans even tweeting that they want Dave Van Horn gone, the coach that's been there for like 20 years or something and has taken them to several College World Series. They're ready to get rid of him after one series loss to A&M.
Yeah, it's
that's just SEC for me.
I mean, we don't expect our fans to be a level-headed bunch. You gotta be a little bit hot-headed if you're a college baseball fan. that's half the fun.
Just listen to the middle 90. Ignore the outer 10%.
All right. So a couple other brief things. So Maryland did take that series at Illinois. Rutgers lost their series to Iowa in the Big Ten, which I want to pat ourselves on the back a little bit. A lot of people were frustrated with us for not having Rutgers higher. We actually had Iowa ranked higher than that in our poll last week than Rutgers did, and Iowa won that series. So good job, Iowa. Maryland also won. So maybe Maryland and Iowa are kind of pulling away a little bit as a top two in the Big Ten, with a few contenders still there for sure. Utah won a series at Southern California, and I want to take like a 5 seconds to make a brief case for Utah as a potential at large like bubble team right now. They're at 9-9 in the conference, 23-15-1 overall, RPI of 72. RPI is not going to get it done, but win a couple more series and we could have an at-large Utah team. So that's kind of fun.
Well, hold on. Did you just acknowledge a tie? I thought you said ties are dumb and aren't allowed.
Ties are dumb. I agree. I didn't want to be inaccurate, but yes, true. They're 23-15 and asterisk.
Well, okay. So you say that, but they have... they host Stanford and host Oregon State in the next 3 weeks. I don't think they can win those series. If they can, they'll surprise me, and yeah, they'll have the opportunity. But
win one of those series, and I think they have a legitimate shot. Yeah, you're right though. The remaining schedule is against all the teams except for two are in the RPI top 100, and they host the top two teams right now in the rankings in the Pac-12. So they'll have some chances. I don't think they're going to make it into the tournament. Let's just be clear. But I think the fact that Utah is where it's at is impressive. This is a pretty solid Utah team.
And with their coach being suspended too.
Yeah, I think he's back.
Part of that.
I think this was the last weekend of that. So he was out this past week. That's the past 59 points to 61 points. It's starting to look a little bit better for me now. Only two points down.
Yeah, I went 0-4 and some pretty bad picks, but that's fine.
Well, let's take a peek now ahead at what's going on next week. And let's try to pick some of the winners and losers for week 11. Man, just a month left in the season.
Yeah. I can't believe it. I think I give you the first one this week. I lost it.
You and I am... I'm ready for it. I'm feeling extra confident.
Okay.
Now. I am on a high from last week's W.
All right. Well, with that, you can pick Alabama at South Carolina.
Give me Alabama in this one. The South Carolina's abysmal performance. Not abysmal. That's a little bit rough. Disappointing, sad performance against Auburn. Man, did you see Seitler for South Carolina had a home run robbed? And it just feels like you just see his heart just broke. I don't know. I just feel like the spirit of Auburn or of South Carolina is just dead. Like, I don't know. The fact that they've beaten Texas and Vanderbilt in series this year is just ridiculous.
It makes no sense.
They are checked out, in my opinion. This is a team that is ready for the offseason. And give me Alabama in this one. Pitching staff is doing a really solid job, and you know, another coach that, you know, at least would be in the conversation maybe for SEC Coach of the Year, Brad Bohannon, right now is putting together a really nice season for Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a totally different story if Alabama was ranked, because that's what South Carolina does. They play up against ranked teams,
but not.
Well, no, that's true.
Maybe not from the state of Alabama.
Yeah. How many points for that one for you?
I'm going to go with 2 points. It's a road series, so it's a little tough, but I'm feeling pretty confident about Alabama.
Then give it 3, 4.
Get out of my head. You're not going to play mind games with me, Kyle.
Okay, fine.
So I'm going to stick in the SEC because I want you to pick A&M at Vanderbilt. This is a series that I think is really fun. A&M obviously is a hot team in the country. Vanderbilt, unranked, mysteriously in a lot of polls. We have them ranked in our top 15 right now. This pitching staff has a 2.92 ERA. I know they've lost more series than they should have. This is a really good team that is going to win a lot of games, in my opinion.
It is. And they have that one series loss to South Carolina. I think that was in Nashville. Nope, that was on the road.
No.
And then they got swept by Tennessee. Lost on the road.
Who hasn't gotten swept by Tennessee, though?
Yeah.
Well, Alabama hasn't, but
that is true.
to be honest, this A&M offense is probably one of the best in the country outside of Knoxville. Like, it is doing well lately for sure.
I appreciate that. I don't know. I think I was looking at just kind of the stats and like seeing that they're like, yeah, top 50, 100 in a lot of offensive stats. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's pretty good. Actually watching some of those games and looking at the lineup they've put together now, because I don't think that, like, it's taken Schlossnagel, I think, a few weeks to actually figure out who's going to be in what role. The lineup they have now is better than the stats that they have on the season average. It is a very good lineup.
Yeah. And maybe I can try and pull something where it's just SEC play or like the last few weeks. Yeah. Yeah. Just like the last few weeks, because I mean, the last three Sundays, quote Sundays, A&M scored 17, 23, and 11 runs against
pitching staffs
that we thought were pretty good. Yeah, Sunday run day, for real. And the bullpen, it is the part about A&M that confuses me the most.
But I know, there's Jacob Polish. But there's like Lou Minifee. It was like good for A&M last year, right? Yeah. Like, and he's
inconsistent. That's his biggest
really
thing.
Really inconsistent this year. But he's had some good outings of late.
Yeah, and then Jacob Polish, I think we already talked about him, but he was nails this weekend.
He's legit. I saw him actually on the West Coast when he played for Stanford. He was graduated from Stanford. And it doesn't look, I don't know, like his stuff is good. It must be deceptively good. I've seen some really good hitters look very foolish against him, including Jacob Berry back when he was playing for Arizona.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
I wonder if...
Yeah, exactly. They both transferred to SEC West after playing in the Pac-12.
Yeah. Well, okay. This is on the road. I picked against A&M last week, and it didn't work out for the pick 'em. But I'm going to go with A&M. I'm going to go with my gut. A&M has been playing really well of late. Vanderbilt had that combined no-hitter on Friday night, I think, that was really impressive and it was really cool. And
then they lost the next day.
Then they lost the next day, which you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. But
the epitome of baseball. You throw a combined no hitter with just two pitchers, the next day you lose to the same team. It's baseball.
Yeah, that's the way baseball go. But yeah, go ahead and give me A&M. I'm going to go 1 point because I don't feel good about this one, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's a tough series, so good luck.
Yeah, thanks. Let's get out of the SEC and go with the rivalry that I don't know the name of, Virginia Tech at Virginia. This is a series that I want no part in, but
yeah,
two really good teams from the state of Virginia.
I would say that I was a little bit of a Virginia Tech doubter, but I saw them in person this last weekend, which I think anytime you see a team in person, it is just really transformative. The offense for Virginia Tech is as advertised, which is extremely good, especially 1 through 6 in the lineup. They have a pretty substantial drop off after that, but Gavin Cross, the center fielder for Virginia Tech and top 5-10 pick prospect in the next MLB draft, is an incredibly athletic center fielder, can make a huge impact offensively as well. A lot of fun to watch. I went to that game. It was Virginia Tech at Boston College, but it was in Fenway Park. Really cool. They had an ALS fundraiser. Did you know that the Ice Bucket Challenge was in part started by at Boston College, related to the baseball team there? There was like a, oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Was that an ALS thing? I think it was.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. The ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. It kind of all started in Boston and was related to Boston College. I didn't realize that. So,
me either. A
big ALS fundraiser every year. Really cool thing. Boston Red Sox obviously get involved with allowing them to use Fenway and raise money for charity. So, good on you, Boston College. It was a cool game. But at the end of the day, Virginia Tech's offense was too much for them to handle in the game and in the series.
Yeah. Virginia Tech has really turned it around since that series sweep at Georgia Tech. They've won every series since then, and
yeah,
it doesn't make sense. It was not expected, I guess.
I'm gonna do a quick stat poll here, because I know Virginia has not been quite as dominant as they were at the beginning of the season, but they still are one of the best teams in the country at home. So they are 31-10 overall. They're 23-2 at home. Ooh. Give me the Cavaliers in this one. They don't lose at home. If they are going to lose, it's going to be to Virginia Tech, though. I think this Virginia Tech offense, it can hang with the Virginia offense. And also the pitching staff. The Saturday starter that I saw in person, Drew Hackenberg, went 7 innings, only 1 earned run, was really dominant against a Boston College offense that is around average in the ACC. So it was a solid offense. But with that, give me Virginia. Just give me them for 1 point right here.
Fair.
And now I'm going to hand it off to you for a little bit of a fun non-conference matchup.
Mm.
TCU and Florida State, both with a break in their conference play, get to have a little cool mid-conference play series.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. But Florida State is heading in the wrong direction. TCU is coming off two really, really good weekends where they vaulted themselves into first place. Their bullpen has been really, really good of late.
Wait, can we pause and say that Florida State swept Louisville last week? Like, yeah. That were that long ago. You can't say they're heading in the wrong direction. They lost a series.
Lose a series?
Yeah, at Clemson. That's not great.
That's not good.
I do think Clemson is better than their conference record. We still have Clemson in our top 50, even though they're 6-11 in the conference, and I'm probably going to miss the tournament because I think it's a pretty solid team. Florida State is hot and cold, I would say. I wouldn't say they're trending in the wrong direction. I would say they have weekends where they get swept by Notre Dame and weekends where they lose at Clemson, but they also have weekends where they sweep Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of forgot about that one being that recently. But
it's because it's the ACC. You know, they've had a good sweep and a good swept against every team in the ACC.
Pretty much, yeah. No one is safe in the ACC.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I really like this TCU offense and bullpen. They have just been lights out on the year. Like, I know they lost a few series recently. Like, they lost a series to West Virginia, lost a series to Texas that was on the road. And lost a series on the road to Kentucky, too, which is actually helping Kentucky's RPI a little bit. But
TCU hasn't been that good away from home. I think that's my biggest concern about them. They lost
to
Texas at Kentucky. So this is going to be – it's a long way to travel to go to Florida State.
Their only road series win was at Baylor, looks like.
But to be fair,
Baylor
hasn't beaten Baylor this year on the road.
Yeah.
Feel bad for Baylor. This is a tragic year, though, for the Bears.
Yeah. Well, Well, now I don't know what to pick. This is like a, you know, I'm going to switch it and I'm going to go Florida State. I'm going to regret it, but.
I think that's the right call here for whatever it's worth.
Well, you're the one who's doing well, but
you still have a two-game lead on me in the season series.
Yeah, but I'm going to go 2 points on this one because I wouldn't be surprised if TCU's bullpen shuts down Florida State. They really shut down Oklahoma State this weekend in game two with, like, even though Oklahoma State tried to come back a little bit, and then back and forth game three was to the visiting team in Oklahoma State. I mean, at TCU.
Yeah. I'm really curious. I think my take on this is that this series goes as the Florida State starters go. If you can get seven plus innings from Messick and Hubbard, I think you feel pretty good. If TCU gets to the bullpen, Florida State bullpen, and becomes a bullpen game at all, I'd say edge TCU.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Well, now I want you to put your preseason.
Don't make me do this.
I'm going to make you do this. Louisiana Tech at ODU.
Fall
from is that what you're thinking?
Fall from grace for Louisiana Tech. I saw that one coming. Old Dominion has had a very good offense of late, and they've had a few series losses that let's take a step back. Last year, Conference USA had 4 teams in the postseason, and it was in large part because RPI was a little bit boosted because maybe potentially some oddities due to scheduling, but really four teams ran away with the conference. Anytime you have four teams run away with a conference, that's a conference that's already pretty good. That can really set a conference up to getting a lot of teams in the postseason. Hasn't really happened like that this year in Conference USA. You have Southern Miss running away from it, and then a whole pack of teams. Old Dominion is sixth in Conference USA, but they're only two games out of second place, for instance. Louisiana Tech is in second place, but they're four games back of Southern Miss. So what does that mean? I don't know. It probably means that Conference USA is getting fewer teams in the postseason because there isn't as much separation. Mm-hmm. What it also means is these series become a lot tougher to pick, because basically in Conference USA last year, it was like, well, is it one of the top four teams playing and not top four teams? They're probably going to win the series. And that was a pretty safe bet. And you only had to worry about it when those top teams were playing against each other. Of late, I've been a lot happier with how Old Dominion's been playing. Series wins against Florida Atlantic and UAB. They did get tripped up by UTSA, but that's more of, I think, credit to the fact that UTSA is a little bit better than they were last year. All that's to say, give me Old Dominion at home. I think I'm going mostly home field advantage here. And the fact that I think that the offense at home, in the comforts of home, is going to be enough to crack a very good pitching staff in Louisiana Tech. I expect maybe some lower scoring games in this one, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I just wanted to shout out quickly, Old Dominion's, one of the other Old Dominion's offense. They have four of the top eight WOBA batters in the Conference USA and the top three home run hitters in Conference USA. I think Matt Kootenay has 21 home runs, and I'm pretty sure he is also at or tied with Ivan Melendez for the national lead in home runs. And then Andy Gariola has 18 and Carter Trice has 15. So those are also close to the national lead. That's pretty impressive. You are correct.
Ivan Melendez and Matt Kootenay are tied two home runs ahead of Kevin Pareda at Georgia Tech. So yeah, I think it was Kootenay's been Conference USA Offensive Player of the Week maybe a couple of weeks now, 2 weeks now. So this offense has been really hot of late, and it's
two Old Dominion players in the top five or so, six, and home runs in the national.
Four.
Well, I guess tied for fourth. Yeah, sure.
So expect a low scoring game in which Old Dominion scores runs only via the home run.
Exactly.
That's
solo shots everywhere.
Yeah, that's the pick. The Louisiana Tech's pitching staff has only given up 29 home runs all year, which is good for 64th in the country. So it'll be a taller task for them.
How many points for you?
Three points on that one.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you, let's head over to the Big 12. Let's do Oklahoma State at Texas, because I think this is a series that just needs to be talked about. Oklahoma State just lost a series and now is no longer in the lead in the Big 12. Texas obviously had a lot of momentum at the beginning of year. They've had some struggles, but they just came off of a ridiculous sweep of Baylor. Just crushed Baylor all week. So all weekend. So who do you have in this series in Austin, Texas?
Yeah, this is a tough one. It's in Austin. So I think I would have to lean for the home team, but so yeah, go ahead and give me Texas for 3 points because I don't feel good. But yeah, this Oklahoma State team is a little bit confusing. I think I just touched on TCU's bullpen, but they kind of got stymied a little bit late in those games. They just couldn't get it done with runners in scoring position when they needed to, and they almost came back and won that third game to win the series. They had two in the ninth with two runners on, and then TCU shut them down. But yeah, go ahead and give me Texas. I think this Texas offense is back to what we expected in the preseason. I think they'll win this one. So 3 points for that one, because I'm not giving it 4 points.
Yeah. I'm really curious how Ivan Melendez goes up against Campbell on Friday night for Oklahoma State. And I think there's going to be some really interesting pitching matchups there.
Yeah, for sure. Your turn. We've already picked too many SEC already.
All right.
We're leaving. So you can do UC Santa Barbara at Cal Poly.
I like this one. I'm going to go Santa Barbara, but Cal Poly is, I would say Cal Poly's in the same boat as Utah, where it's like, hey, they're actually like not eliminated from the postseason. And I mean, we did have them.
Blood and foreign conference.
Yeah, exactly. And we had them in our top 50 in the preseason. Unfortunately, the Big West has had an RPI struggle in this year. So they're second in the conference behind UC Santa Barbara, but they're 113th in the RPI. So I think they would have to win basically all their series from here on out. And I don't know. Well, it's a tall task for Cal Poly. But with that said, I mean, they do have the top, one of the top, and the top shortstop prospect in the country in Brooks Lee. And they will definitely be a tough task for Santa Barbara, but I am going to take Santa Barbara for my four full points. The pitching staff is just too much. Top 20 pitching staff in the country. And I mean, Santa Barbara has just crushed it through Big West play. They're 16-2 overall, haven't dropped a series. So give me the Gauchos.
Yeah, Big West, RPI rating is 20th of the conferences. That's not good.
Tragic year for the Big West, looking like a one-bit league.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, all right, your turn to give me one.
Yeah, so this is the last one. And, you know, I'm going to go with Miami at Georgia Tech because what we've proven is that ACC matchups are impossible to predict. So. Good luck.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at our team comparison here, and there's a bunch of red on the Georgia Tech pitching staff, a bunch of green on the Georgia Tech offense, but Miami's better overall. I think even though this is on the road, I'm going to go with Miami for 4 points. Cool, because that's all I have left. But I would be really shocked. Well, no. I shouldn't say that because the ACC shouldn't shock anyone. If any result shouldn't shock, but I would be shocked if Georgia Tech won this series. I think. I mean, yeah. I know Miami's coming off that series loss to Virginia Tech, but we already talked about Virginia Tech how good they are on offense. But yeah, so go ahead and give me Miami.
That was 2 weekends ago. Miami did win against Pitt this last weekend, so they've already had their bounce back week.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think that honestly, if Miami wins this series, they're getting pretty close to locking up a host bid.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So that's, this is
16-5 in conference. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're at 18-6 in the ACC with just what, 3 weeks to go after that, then I mean, it's really hard and your top will probably be top five RPI after that. Yeah. They're going to be, they're getting close to a lock, which is fun. We're starting to kind of, I think, see that vision for how the postseason is going to be shaping up.
Yeah, it's almost here.
It is almost here, and that's just a scary thing.
Yeah, we got to make our postseason plans.
Yeah, exactly. I know we already have, we're figuring out coverage right now. We already have a guy committed to the Big 12 tournament and a guy committed to the SEC tournament. So we're starting to flesh out our coverage for College Baseball Nation over the next few weeks, but it's going to be exciting times here at College Baseball Nation. One last thing before we go, we have an interview with Southern Miss slugger Slade Wilkes, joined by Tom Sipe, a contributor for College Baseball Nation. He and I interview Slade Wilkes, and it's a fun interview. It's fun talking about Southern Miss because what they've done this year is just super special. Number 5 in the country, best team in the state of Mississippi. I mean, it's just a historic year for the Golden Eagles. Next up on the podcast, we're welcoming in Slade Wilkes from Southern Miss Baseball. Thanks for joining us, Slade.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
So 32-8 on the season. You just moved up to number 5 in our rankings, and you're in the top 5 in a lot of rankings out there. You're on a 14-game winning streak. A lot's going right for you guys. Can you just talk a little bit about what's going on with the team?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun here lately. We've been playing some good baseball, and just seems like the wins or see them pile up for us, but it's just been a lot of fun. We got a lot of confidence, and just playing a lot of confidence. It's been a lot of fun.
I think that one thing that can breed confidence is experience. And last year you had a pretty good season as well, making it to a regional, winning 3 games in that regional, getting pretty close to making it to a super regional. Can you talk a little bit about how some of that experience that you've had in last year and the last several years of Southern Miss has been a really solid program for a while is contributing to some of the success that you've had this season?
Right. No doubt last year, the run we had has helped us, have that late postseason experience going into this year and just kind of knowing what to expect. And I mean, all of our offense is pretty much back from last year, and we're just building on last year, and just a year of experience is huge. So that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. And, even touching on last year a little bit more, even before you guys were in the Oxford Regional, you guys played 3 really incredible games against Louisiana Tech. Those last 2 games were really tough. I know you had, your big moment with that big homer. But how much does, falling in that tournament last year, maybe has that provided as an extra motivator as you've headed into conference play this year?
No doubt. I mean, we were on the verge of, being the top of our conference last year. And that's something we set out to do every year is win our conference. And we were really close multiple times last year of doing that, especially the 2 we lost to them, back to back. Those were really tough games. But I think it's just like, this year we're a lot more mature and just a better team than we were last year. So
yeah, and you mentioned how a lot of your offense especially has come back this season. In the offseason, after the regional loss, was there a sense within your team, during this past year, this past winter, that you guys had a chance to be even better than you were last year?
Oh, no doubt. We during the fall and the inter squads and practice, we knew we could be a really good team, just had to put it together. And you're starting to see it come together a little bit for us. And we've been playing good baseball, but I mean, I still think, we can obviously do a lot better, but we're starting to play good. So.
And so far, especially in conference play, the offense has been really solid for you guys, Dustin Dickerson, Rodrigo Montenegro, others, a lot of younger guys, relatively speaking, they're doing pretty well for you. And especially in an era when there's 25-year-olds playing college baseball right now,
yeah.
Like what does that say about how even on offense, you have a lot of the guys have about a year of experience, but there's some younger guys doing really well for you guys right now.
Yeah, we got Carson Pato. He's batting leadoff for us and playing in outfield. He's having an incredible year. He's just a confident guy, and he has tons of ability, and it's just, he's blooming, so that's awesome. And I mean, we got other guys that haven't played just a ton, but I mean, I feel our offense is, we're sound from top to bottom. So.
And I think that the pitching staff has got to be a lot of fun to play with. I mean, they're number 2 in the country in ERA, a 2.8 ERA. I mean, just any stat you want to pull about the pitching staff right now is pretty ridiculous. Yep. They're striking out everybody, just not giving up home runs. I mean, what is it like knowing that you as an offense really don't have, you can have one good inning and win a game with that sort of pitching staff?
it definitely takes a lot of pressure off of us because, just 9 out of 10 times those guys are going to keep the other team, not going to let them, just have their way too much. So it's pretty comforting as offense because it's really fun to watch our pitchers go out and do their thing. I mean, they're really good from top to bottom, not just our starters, our guys coming out the pen. I mean, we've just got a really good pitching staff. So that's really nice as the offense and just takes the pressure off of us as a whole.
Yeah, I just 15 home runs allowed by your pitching staff versus 49 from your offense. So you've hit like 3 times the number of home runs as you guys have given up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so much fun just looking through these stats. You could just say so much about how much that pitching staff has done for you guys.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, talking about the offense as a whole, we could touch on you a little bit as well. So, last year at times, it seemed like sometimes there could have been a little bit of struggle, at the plate, but this year, obviously you've had a big breakout sophomore season. What did you really learn from last year that has helped you improve so much this year?
Right. For me coming in as a freshman, I was a little, I guess you'd say I was not necessarily nervous, but I was just trying to do too much at the plate and just really wasn't staying within myself. And then like went off the summer ball, kind of found myself again, and then just kind of let that carry over, I guess you'd say. Just maturity a lot.
Now, what experiences, you know, have you brought from that summer ball experience? You know, a lot of different college players talk about, you know, how they're playing in the summer and how they've, you know, really, you know, progressed as a player. What did you take away from your experience in summer ball this past year?
Summer ball was really good for me. Just, you know, having constant ABs every day against high level pitching. And so that just helped me a lot, just being able to, because, you know, you're in and out of the lineup. It gets kind of hard at times, but, you know, getting ABs every day just helped me build a lot of confidence and stuff heading into this year.
Sure. And, you know, it does seem like maybe your walks have been up, and it seems like maybe you're a little bit more patient at the plate, maybe a little bit more selective. You know, do you think that's the reason why you've been able to be successful this year?
No doubt. It's, you know, last year I was just kind of up there just swinging, you know, I guess you'd say. But this year, like, I have more of an approach and more of a plan, and it's helped out for sure. I've bought into what, like, we teach here, and it's really helped.
And as you've played a larger role in the team's offense, do you feel yourself taking on any sort of leadership role? How do you see you impacting some of the younger guys, and where do you see yourself fitting into the team dynamic?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, I definitely say that it's really hard, because I'd say that our team is really built full of leaders, especially really just from top to bottom. I mean, we teach, like, I mean, I'm only a second year guy, but I mean, I'm helping like the younger guys, like trying to go help them with the problems I had last year of like just buying in what we teach here and just getting through those growing pains and stuff like that. And, I mean, we have some great offensive leaders on this team, like Will McGillis, Danny Lynch, Charlie Fisher, and like Gabe Montenegro. I mean, those guys are great mentors and stuff like that.
Sure. And, you know, we touched in the open about how you guys, you know, are on this, was now 14 game winning streak. You know, how fun has this experience been for you guys? You know, I know you have wins against Ole Miss and Mississippi State, and you have so many big wins this season. You know, how fun has this season been for you so far?
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, I mean, we're about as close as a group of college kids can be. I mean, you know, we have a lot of fun together, and I mean, we're on the field. I mean, I don't think anyone really has nerves, because we're just out there having fun. But, you know, it's nice. I mean, we just take it one game at a time, but I mean, we haven't really accomplished anything yet. And that's what we keep reminding ourselves of, just one game at a time. And so.
College baseball is huge in the state of Mississippi, and I don't know if there's another state that cares as much about college baseball. And it goes without saying that with teams like Ole Miss and Mississippi State, there's a lot of local talent there. So is there any sort of bragging rights and any buddies from high school, things like that you feel like you can maybe talk a little trash to now that Southern Miss is clearly the best team in the state right now? Or are you trying to stay away from all that?
I normally stay away, but I have some buddies that are, you know, they don't play at Ole Miss or State, but they're big fans, and they'll always text me before like we play one another and be like, hey, like, I'm coming to the game tonight. Hope you do all right, and hope y'all lose. So that's kind of how that goes.
But, yeah, so
it's all fun.
Yeah, and you know, as the regular season winds down, you touched on, you know, how you haven't accomplished anything yet, right? You know, as this regular season winds down, you have, I think it's 14 of your 15 games are against, you know, teams who have records over 500, and then obviously you have your conference tournament, and then, you know, hopefully you guys have a chance of hosting a regional, right? You know, how do you guys plan on continuing to embark, you know, on your recent success to continue to propel that into the postseason?
Yeah, no doubt. I mentioned it earlier, but not trying to be repetitive, but our big thing is just one game at a time. Don't look ahead. We try not to look into the rankings and stuff like that too much. We just stay in our lane and do what we can, and everything else, you know, take care of itself. And so we just try not to get caught up in all the, I guess, like publicity and stuff like that. It's nice, sure. But, you know, just don't read too much into it. Just do what we can every game. And
How have you guys handled goal setting on the year? Because I know a lot of teams will set some goals at the beginning. And like you're saying, it's you got to balance the fact that you're working towards these goals, but that you can't do anything. You can't win a national championship in the middle of conference play. That's not how it works. So how do you think about goals and how do you actually manage those expectations?
we set out at the beginning of the year, it's been a little while since we've won our conference. I mean, because we were winning it pretty regularly through like 15 through 18. I don't think we've won it since 19. And so we're wanting to get back to that, winning our conference and then hosting a regional. And then, everything else from there, I mean, we want to do, but first and foremost, we want to win our conference and then host. So.
And I want to talk a little bit too about Conference USA, because last year was a banner year for the conference with four teams making a regional and being really competitive in regionals. And this year, it's another year where the conference is a top 10 RPI conference. So it looks like another year it's going to be a multi-bid league. We'll see how many teams actually make it in, 2, 3, 4. But what's it like? What's your view on the conference right now in the state of Conference USA as you've played in it now your second year?
Right. I think it's a very good conference. I think we got to go out every weekend and play. And if we don't, there's a good chance we'll lose. I mean, we can't take any team lightly. And I think anyone, can beat us or can beat anyone in the league at any given date. So, I mean, you just got to go out and play one game at a time and don't look too ahead to, I guess you'd say, like the big series or anything like that.
And I want to wrap up here just talking a little bit about Southern Miss fans, because Southern Miss fans are loyal through the good and through the not so good. And the product that you guys have put on the field is in high demand right now. So can you talk a little bit about what the atmosphere is like at games and what fan support has been for you so far this year?
For sure. That's an easy topic to talk about. We have great fans down at Southern Miss. I mean, it really all season long, and I can remember coming to games as a kid. There's always been good fans at Southern Miss, always a lot of people at our games. I mean, the past few weekends we've been home, it's near about been a sold out crowd every weekend. And I mean, they're passionate and they're hungry just like we are, and they're loving the success we're having so far. And it's just been there. I think they're having as much fun as we are.
All of Hattiesburg, Mississippi is having a blast right now watching you guys. Slade, thanks for joining the podcast. Best of luck moving forward. We're looking forward to seeing what Southern Miss can do. It's been a lot of fun watching you guys so far this year.
Sure, thank you. I had some fun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already, go rate and review us on iTunes. It helps spread the word about the podcast, and we really love that. It would be great if more people listen, because people listening to this means people care about college baseball, and we know you care about college baseball, so go rate and review the podcast. Be sure to follow us at CollegeBallNet on social media, and check out all of our amazing writers on our website, collegebaseball.info. Thanks. Have a great week.